or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the sunny side of sports.
Great show, bro. This is sunny side of sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
This is VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Welcome to the July 8th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. The energetic Andy Edwards has been taking a look at the life of the late, great ultra-distance runner Arthur Newton, who won the Comrades Marathon in South Africa five times between 1922 and 1927. In 1928, a man Andy describes as larger than life, event promoter Charles C. Pyle organized the first transcontinental race across the USA. The starting line was in Los Angeles, California, with an aim to finish all the way across the country in New York City. It was in Los Angeles where Arthur Newton met his lifelong friend, Pete Gavuzzi. Andy, were Newton and Gavuzzi similar in ability and character?
Both were great long-distance runners, and I do mean long. These are races where a marathon a day is considered a short stage. Otherwise, they were mostly chalk and cheese. Newton, tall and reserved in his manner to everyone. He even asked Gavuzzi to address him as Mr. Newton throughout his life, no matter how close their friendship. Gavuzzi had wanted to become a jockey in England, grew too big, and discovered a talent for running. Initially, you might think that Gavuzzi deferred to Newton, but he was more relaxed in public than his running partner, whereas Newton couldn't stand fuss of any kind, even when it was celebrating his career.
Andy, what happened in this first transcontinental race across the USA way back in 1928?
Arthur Newton had to drop out, suffering an Achilles injury just before Albuquerque in New Mexico. But he was engaged by Charles Pyle as a technical director, liaising between promoter and athletes. Pete Gavuzzi leads the field by 6 hours and has the $25,000 first prize in sight, just over 400 miles remaining and 3,000 behind him, when excruciating toothache forces him to drop out. Several career changes emerge from this for the two men. By running this race, they have become professionals, losing their amateur status. They have formed a friendship and, knowing that this is their only way to earn money in tough times, they decide to train together for the 1929 edition of the Transcontinental.
This 1929 Transcontinental, Andy, did Newton and Gavuzzi learn their lessons and prosper on the reversed route from New York to Los Angeles?
At first they do. But the promoter, Charles C. Pyle, has devised a schedule which Arthur Newton describes as sadistic madness. Pyle always had money worries, tended to live in luxury, but that didn't mean he had the funds to support that lifestyle. To keep the finishing numbers down, since feeding the runners was part of the deal, he devised an even tougher daily regime, cutting back the number of days allowed and increasing the mileage. After 78 days and 3,500 miles, the survivors were starting the final stage in Huntington Park, Los Angeles. Pyle, the promoter, said the run of 4 miles to the track in Wrigley Field, where they would run a full marathon in race conditions, did not count as racing. By then, Arthur Newton had dropped out after being knocked down by a car, but Pete Gavuzzi was leading the field by 10 minutes. And then, what do you know? The route to the stadium is crossed by a train track. Gavuzzi is taking it easy and in a group which has to wait a few minutes for a passing train. When they arrive at the stadium, they find the marathon well underway, contrary to the information provided by the promoter. Gavuzzi loses first place and the prize money for first place, and that for second as well, since the next day Charles C. Pyle has disappeared and none of the runners ever received payment.
That must have been crushing, Andy. Did Arthur Newton and Pete Gavuzzi continue to run these ultra races?
They moved to Canada and were a big draw for a couple of years, even doing winter races in Francophone Canada in snowshoes. But the public appetite for such endurance events was waning and extinguished by the mid-1930s. Newton didn't want to return to South Africa and settled in West London. Goetze moved to France and was interned in World War II during the Nazi occupation. Both were scraping a living. Goetze as a gardener, Newton getting some articles on running and training published, as well as three books. But both men had a hand-to-mouth existence. Then Pete Goetze decided to return to England and settled near Arthur Newton in West London. This was the autumn of 1951, and he becomes a regular visitor to Arthur Newton's house, but still calling him Mr. Newton. The latter's home in the suburb of Ruislip became a home from home for a number of South African distance runners in the 1950s. Following in his footsteps, they ran the London to Brighton Ultra Race. In the spring of 1956, friends in South Africa persuaded Arthur Newton to return for a visit. He was reluctant, didn't relish being made a fuss of, but it seems to have been a reconciliation of sorts. By then, he was in failing health, suffering with eye trouble. Arthur Newton died 3 years later in London. Pete Goetze moved to the West Country in England, often described his loneliness in the diaries he kept, but he was reunited with son and grandchildren after an estrangement lasting a couple of decades. He died in 1981. Arthur Newton is remembered in South African distance running. There is a spot on the Comrades course named Arthur's Seat, where he used to observe the race he won five times, and runners are encouraged to lay a bouquet of flowers en route to Durban or Maritzburg. Pete Goetze is largely forgotten in British distance running, probably because he never ran in the Olympics or became a marathon specialist. For both of them, the longer the distance, the better they ran.
Thanks, Andy! That's the energetic Andy Edwards speaking with us from his home library in North London.
I'm Kendra Harrison. I'm the 100 hurdle world record holder for Team USA, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
The World Health Organization and Africa Center for Disease Control say we can all help fight the corona pandemic by wearing face masks that cover our mouths and nose when we are in crowded places or areas. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest news on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
I'm VOA Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Now let's go to Ghana, where the government is urging citizens to take their health seriously and exercise during the coronavirus pandemic. Although social distancing has made going to the gym a challenge, health experts say fancy equipment is not needed. Gyms and personal trainers have switched to online exercise classes, while a popular Ghanaian bodybuilder shows you can exercise from anywhere during the pandemic. Stacy Knott reports from Accra.
Since opening her gym in 1996, Pippa Pepera has seen a growing interest in health and fitness in Ghana. Before COVID-19, at its peak, the gym would see 130 members a day. Now, many are staying away. But to help them keep fit, Pepera adjusted. She rents out equipment and encourages home workouts. The gym also offers online Azonto aerobics, a dance style that originated in Ghana.
Azonto is something that, you know, the kids can do at home, mom can do, grandma, grandpa, everybody can get involved as a family event. So we thought it would just be a fun, light way of getting people up, because we know, again, during C19, a lot of people have become couch potatoes, sitting down, much less active.
up in a mountainous area outside the capital, bodybuilder and school teacher Samuel Kulbula is living proof that you don't need expensive equipment to keep fit. He works out in backyard gyms where he creates and uses repurposed and improvised gym equipment like cement weights. This has earned him an international following through his social media posts. He tells followers that there is no excuse not to exercise, and the pandemic makes that even more important. Kilbilla is building his own outdoor gym in his backyard. He has also created a pandemic workout guide for his global followers to use while home.
I started getting a lot of messages, DMs and emails, people telling me to help them because their gyms have been closed, and they normally see me training at the kind of backyard gyms, and they believe I can fix something.
Before COVID-19 hit Ghana, fitness coach and mother of two, Ma Bina Antri, held boot camps for women. She has also moved her coaching online, working from her apartment in the outskirts of Accra. She's found she enjoys working from home as she can spend more time with her kids.
I'm home, so, you know, I'm able to, I think, give them a little bit more of attention and still work, even though it's not, you know, fetching as much. It's still very lucrative and it's good. And I'm looking at definitely keeping the online classes.
These Ghanaian fitness coaches have made the best out of social distancing to promote exercise online. But they also hope the motivation and encouragement from the government to stay fit will continue once a pandemic is over. Stacey Knott for VOA News, Accra, Ghana.
Hi, this is Tatiana McFadden, 17-time Paralympic medalist, 7-time gold medalist, 17-time marathon champion, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on Voice of America.
Hi, this is Larry London, the host of VOA's Border Crossings, where we feature music and interviews along with your favorite artists from around the world. And interact live with us here in Washington, D.C. Hello, Shirin.
Hello, Larry. How are you?
Good. How are you tonight? Border Crossings comes to you Monday through Friday at 1500 UTC GMT.
Thanks, Larry. That's Larry London, a man who's always ready to cross musical borders. In pro basketball, Cameroonian star Joel Embiid of the Philadelphia 76ers has criticized plans by the NBA to resume its season at the end of July in Orlando, Florida.
I'm not a big fan of the idea, but then again, you know, I'm going to do my job. I'm not going to let the city down. You know, I'm going to go and present my city. That's what I've always done. My family and my teammates. So just got to, the mindset doesn't change. I mean, it doesn't matter the fact that I don't like that idea and I still don't believe in it. And I don't think it's going to be safe enough because I know I'm going to do the right things. I know I don't ever do anything. I only play video games. I'm always home. I don't do anything. But then again, I don't trust those other guys to do the same.
Joel Embiid and his teammates are scheduled to travel to Orlando on Thursday. They'll train there for 3 weeks and play some exhibition games before playing a shortened regular season ahead of the NBA playoffs. Because of coronavirus concerns, the NBA is creating what it hopes is a protected bubble for its teams at the ESPN Wide World of Sports Complex in Orlando. Major League Soccer is planning to restart its season in the same Orlando area beginning later Wednesday night, but there have been COVID-19 problems. VOA's Gwen Uten will tell us about that later in the show. But first, Kansas City Chiefs quarterback Patrick Mahomes has signed what is reportedly the largest contract in American professional sports history, a 12-year deal that could be worth $503 million. The 24-year-old Mahomes led the Chiefs to their first Super Bowl title in 50 years in early February when they defeated the San Francisco 49ers 31-20. Mahomes talks about his big new contract.
It's been a team effort the entire way. I think that's the special thing about this organization is that, like V said, there's trust amongst everybody. As much as I trust in them, they trust in me. And we were able to go out there and get this contract done the right way that not only gives me the security that, that I've always wanted, but also allows opportunity for the team to be great around me the entire duration of my career. And I have full trust that things will get handled the right way as we go throughout this career and that we will be in a position to win a lot of football games and hopefully win a lot more championships as my career goes on.
That's Super Bowl winning quarterback Patrick Mahomes of the Kansas City Chiefs, who shouldn't have too many problems paying his bills over the next decade or so. Patrick is said to be the first professional athlete to have a contract worth $500 million. Yes, you heard me right. $500 million. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America.
Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
Thanks, Heather. That's Heather Maxwell, the host of our Music Time in Africa program. Music Time in Africa is the Voice of America's longest-running English language show. It was founded in 1965 by the late, great Leo the Music Man Sarkisian. And while Leo is gone, his spirit lives on at our VOA headquarters here in Washington. Studio 23 is dedicated to Leo. Major League Soccer's MLS's back tournament is scheduled to begin later Wednesday night in Orlando, Florida. It marks the league's return to action since it suspended play almost 4 months ago because of the international coronavirus crisis. VOA's Gwen Uten takes a look at how MLS has staged the event amid the current pandemic. Sporty greetings, Gwen.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. Major League Soccer was hit with a double blow this week in its attempt to restart the season amid the global pandemic. On Tuesday, Nashville SC's first match in the MLS tournament was postponed due to an outbreak of COVID-19. That came on the heels of news that FC Dallas was forced to withdraw from competition when 10 players and a staff member tested positive for the virus. In response, the league said it will continue to evaluate squad participation in the MLS's back tournament and that every measure has been taken to keep the players safe. One such measure is the so-called quarantine bubble that serves to isolate players on the grounds of Disney's Orlando Park and is off limits to the general public. Ahead of the tournament, Orlando City midfielder Nani said he's not concerned about the positive cases in the MLS and feels safe enough to compete.
To be honest, I feel safe here. Since I arrived here in the hotel, I see all the conditions, the way they manage everything for the players to be safe. I agree with, and I until now, see all the players here, all the teams, they look happy, they look like comfortable with all these protocols. And obviously, there were some stories about some players who got the virus, but I think these players, they came already with the virus to the hotel. So that's a thing to don't worry, the ones who are already here. And they've been managed very well, all these situations. I'm positive about the tournament, about the all the bubble here in Disney. And I hope we continue like that until the end of this tournament, because we are already here. We want to make this tournament, and we wanted to make it well. And I want everyone to be safe, everyone to go back home safe and happy.
Orlando City will face Inter Miami in Wednesday's opening match. And Miami goalkeeper Luis Robles says he too feels safe in conditions that are beyond his control.
The thing that our team continues to reiterate is that we have to practice. We have to at least honor the protocol, but we also have to practice good habits. That means we wear a mask as much as we can. And the only time that we shouldn't be wearing it, or the only time that we don't wear it, is in our rooms or when we're at the meal room eating as a team, or of course on the training field. So I guess the message that I would say to whoever does this next is that those protocols are there for a reason. And as long as you continue to stress the importance of it and put the responsibility on individuals and those individuals abide by it, I think you increase your chances of creating the safest environment possible. So it doesn't matter how many people you add. If you're able to maintain your distance and you wear your mask and the testing is all there to make sure that you can contain situations, I think you at least put yourself in a position to feel safe.
Earlier this week, MLS Commissioner Don Garbel told the Associated Press that if at any time he believes the players are at risk, he will make the decision to shut down the tournament. The month-long competition features group stage matches that count in the regular season standings, with the winner sealing a spot in the 2021 CONCACAF Champions League. The MLS plans to resume its regular season with a revised schedule following the tournament. And I want to mention that the NBA will also create a quarantine bubble for its players when the basketball season restarts at Walt Disney World Resort later this month. And that is all from me, Sonny. Back over to you.
Thanks, Gwen. That's my VOA colleague, Gwen Uten. The Sunny Side of Sports remembers Willie Holdorf, who won the Olympic gold medal for Germany in the 10-event decathlon at the 1964 Olympics in Tokyo. Holdorf died at his home in Germany on Sunday after a long illness. He was 80 years old. World Athletics describes Holdorf as one of Germany's greatest multi-sports talents. He was also an excellent football and handball player when he was a teenager, but Holdorf achieved his greatest success in athletics. That Olympic decathlon title in Tokyo 56 years ago would be his last. With a young family to support, Willie Holdorf retired from athletics and worked as an electrician while completing his studies. But Willie Holdorf wasn't done with sports. He later returned as an athletics coach in the late 1960s, guiding fellow German Klaus Schiprowski to an Olympic silver medal in the pole vault in 1968. And in winter sports, Holdorf competed in two-man and four-man bobsled, winning a bronze medal in the former at the 1973 European Championships. In addition, Willie Holdorf later managed the Bundesliga football club Fortuna Cologne. Yes, he was truly an all-around sportsman. Olympic decathlon champion Willie Holdorf of Germany, dead at the age of 80. And And that wraps up the July 8th edition of the show. Thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the sunny side of sports.
I get it.
VOA Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's Newsmaker Interview Program. Join us each Saturday and Sunday when we talk with authors, analysts, and policymakers who provide fresh insight on topics ranging from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. You can listen to Press Conference USA on the radio or online at voanews.com/PCUSA. While you're visiting our website, be sure to subscribe to our podcast. We'd also love to hear from you. Just send an email to pcusa@voanews.com or connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/CarolCastielVOA or on Twitter at CarolCastielVOA. That's Press Conference USA every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and the artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
VOA's Our Voices television program is about more than just sitting and talking about women's issues. It's about listening to them and bringing their opinions to the table and making sure that their voices are heard. Because our lived experiences, our stories, and our voices will help shape the next generation.
Check your local TV listings and join the conversation each week with Our Voices on VOA.
Join your host, Larry London, for Border Crossings, VOA's Worldwide Music Request Hour, every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in to hear your favorite songs and artists, win prizes and giveaways, and get the latest scoop from exclusive celebrity interviews. Send in requests to our Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, or call 202-618-2077 to have your favorite music played for the entire world. Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal.
The Voice of America's Global News Program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest news stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. Our correspondents gather the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 3:30 and 1705 UTC on The Voice of America.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to sikus, Afrobeat to ndombolo, and makosa to kwaito. The African